Support for the Closing Market Report podcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of July, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting. The folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County will be along with a look at the cash grain market. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Jim Angel out at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, and Dave Dickey will have today's agricultural news as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC. Land auctions, farm management, financial services, and institutional and corporate real estate. Information on upcoming land auctions can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
Let's check the numbers as they settle up in Chicago for a Friday afternoon. The contracts like this: July futures at 675.5, a settlement price for the soft red, down 3.75. September at $6.81, finished 2 cents lower. In December, wheat at $6.93.75, down 2.75. From the corn pit, the nearby July futures at 701.5, or 15.25 lower on the day. September at 545.5, down 15.25. And December futures at 509.25, down 17.75. March contract in the corn pit, 521.5, 17.75 lower. In the May futures there, at $5.29, and finish 17.75 lower. Soy complex now, bean futures, 15.63.25, down 38 cents. August at 14.29, down 43 cents. September, 12.98.25, down 34.25. November beans at 12.57.5, or rather 12.57.25. For the November harvest month, 33.5 cents the loss. January futures, $12.61.75, down 33.25. And the March contract at $12.60.25, down 32.5 cents. The bean meal futures at 535.50, up $9.80, and the bean oil at 46.09, and they finished the day 40 cents higher. Live cattle futures from the Mercantile Exchange side with the livestock, August at 121.85, is 7.5 cents lower. August futures for the day at 150.12.5 unchanged, but the September's there at 152.72.5, or 17.5 cents higher. And July lean hogs at $102.10 for 100 pounds, finished 7.5 cents lower. The August at $94.90, down 37.5 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. Please do visit our website. The address there is willag.org. That address again, willag.org. This is Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures trading in August at $105.97 a barrel, $1.06 higher. RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, at $3.11.4. That's up 9.2. And ethanol at $2.45 is a penny and 9 cents lower. The difference between the two is now 66.4 of a cent. That's 11.1 of a cent wider than it was yesterday. Natural gas at 364.2, up 2.9. And diesel fuel at $3.03.2 of a cent. That's up 3.7 of a cent. Gold futures trading $1,277.60 at the end of the day. We're down $2.30, and the dollar at 83 even, up 0.25. Here's what the weather forecast looks like. This comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Outside our area here, 81 degrees at the moment, sunny skies, and a high of 82, so we're right on top of it. East-northeast winds at about 7 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear and a low of 59. Sunny skies tomorrow, and a high of 84. And then, as we make our way into Sunday, we'll have sunny skies and 86. Monday, partly sunny and 87. And on Tuesday, we'll have partly cloudy skies, and we'll see a high of 89. Wednesday, sunny and 90, and Thursday, 90 degrees and mostly sunny. The lows from that period, a little higher than they have been, ranging from a low of 69 degrees early on to about 72, but still pretty warm as we make our way through parts of next week. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast closer to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute here here on the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Now you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is the 12th day of July, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, is Mike Zuzulo. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, it was a good week for corn for quite a while until Friday. And even then, we ended up the week higher this Friday than we did last Friday.
Yeah, you know, a lot of that on the heels of the July futures and the cash basis. So that actually sweetened the pot a little bit as well as far as underpinning the market. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that the trade really didn't want to deal with the fresh purchase of Chinese purchases of U.S. corn this morning of about 8 million bushels. They were pretty laser-focused, in my opinion, on the weather in the post-USDA environment. So today's trade below December 510 and below November beans of the 1270 level does put us in jeopardy. There is a gap in the Dow Jones UBS grain index chart about 1.5% to 2% lower than today's closes. So the short term could be a continuation of today if the weather doesn't change back to hot and dry on Sunday night. But I think in the medium term, we did a lot of bridge building, and I think the cash market still suggests that we're extremely tight, and that's not going to go away anytime soon.
Hey, did you sell $8 July corn today?
No, I just don't play with something with 600 contracts of open interest. That'd be like trading the cheddar cheese market or something
what,
like that.
What the devil is up with that? I mean, that is a long haul up there. Of course, it settled at $7 a penny and a half. It was still 16 and three quarters higher on the week, but $8 was a long run to the top. I guess somebody got squeezed hard.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, you're probably in a situation at that point where there's just literally no one there to meet you on the other side, and that's what happens when you get into these kind of markets.
You know, somebody had to be there to meet, right? Somebody made a buy and a sell at $8, though.
There's always a price that somebody's willing to take if it goes to the right level. That's right.
We won't bother with the rest of it. It was just an anomaly I saw, and I thought that is fairly interesting. December contract. A 490 low this week, settled at 509 and a quarter. I went back and looked at the life of contract low on it. I think it is $3.98 and a quarter cents. So it's a lot further down than where we are now. I'm wondering, because we're up 18 cents on the week, are you of a mind that this needs to be sold in the 520, 530, 540, 550 area? New crop, what do you think?
I'm holding on to puts, but clearly no cash sales at these levels.
Right.
And I think this is where, with the structural shift in the wheat market, both in terms of what the USDA has finally introduced in terms of lower supplies and improving export demand, and also the structural shift in the commodity prices where the July wheat in Kansas City and the July wheat in Minneapolis stayed at an inverse, Kansas City and Minneapolis stayed at an inverse, but the Chicago July did come back down and stayed a carrying charge. But between that and the fact that the USDA report did show a structural shift, in my opinion, I don't think we have as much negativity or downside momentum now as we go into the middle part of say, after the middle of July to the end of July. Maybe by the time we get to August, we've been able to carve out a low in the corn because the wheat's been able to carve out a low about 30 days ahead of it. So, yes, you may have to go down and test the old lows and kind of try and form a double bottom. But unless something comes out of nowhere, like a currency shift or something that would be very negative to the hedge funds or the index funds, I think you're probably fundamentally trying to find a place to bottom the December corn market here.
Again, why is that the case? I'm looking at a crop at this point that under normal conditions should be good. Are you telling me that the supply of wheat or the usage of wheat or demand or something is going to be so strong that it's going to be held up?
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to the conversation we had a couple months ago, probably after the May report, where the supplies were getting bigger than the demand, but the idea was that the demand would start to come up as prices went down. And I think the Chinese, the report on the Chinese with the imports being jacked up 5 million tons, their corn production being taken down 1 million metric tons, I think that is a very good indicator that you've got real serious problems in central China in the supply side, and that therefore that demand is probably going to be there for quite some time as far as solid demand from other countries. And I think the Middle East is another area where they're probably running tight on wheat. The ex-finance minister in Egypt said that they're really only dealing with about 2 months of a supply of imported wheat at this point. The government is trying to say they've got supplies that will take them all the way into Christmas. And so I do think that, you know, demand usually puts bottoms and lows in the market. I do think you're starting to find that shift to a more demand-led market because these new crop prices have reached a point that are attractive.
So China, do you believe, will be simply in as a buyer long-term now for corn in the United States?
I do, because I think that the feed grain sector is finally through the worst of the situation where you have this abundant feed wheat supply that competes with corn. I mean, you know, USDA this week put another increase in United States wheat. I think that's probably going to have to be pulled back. Russia's wheat production is probably 2 to 4 million tons too high because of their late heat and dryness they've seen. Australia, the USDA raised that yesterday in terms of production. They're typically a big seller to China in Australian wheat, but I think that probably is about 3 to 6 million tons too high because Victoria, the areas of Victoria, some of them have not gotten more than 50% of their normal cumulative precipitation. So I think you do have some further downgrading in the supply side for the wheat, and that, again, transfers into the corn market that you have less competition.
Okay, let me go through China with you just a bit because I'm thinking about this and the Smithfield purchase, potentially, what that means. So is it possible, Mike, do you think fundamentally that China just is in need of red meat, and whether they get it through a purchase of Smithfield and we produce more red meat here and ship larger cuts frozen to them, or we ship grain to them and they produce it there, one way or the other, they're going to need grain from the Middle West in order to make that happen.
This is a huge issue that I'm working on right now, Todd. There is a lack of trust in China of domestically produced grains, dry milk powder, meat, bean oil. There's been a lot of anecdotal evidence over the last year or so that it's not as much an issue where they've run out of space or they've run out of environment. That is an issue, but there's also a secondary issue that may be as important, if not more important, that the Chinese domestic production has lost the faith and the confidence of the domestic Chinese consumer, and that they are going to have to make a structural long-term shift of importing the final product. And that's something I'm working on right now. BBC had a very good update about a week or two ago about the vegetable oil market shifting in China, that the middle class is starting to buy a lot more olive oil from the Mediterranean, and there's actually shortages of olive oil in certain parts of Italy now, and that is because specifically they've lost their trust in domestic soybean oil, and we've had this milk powder scare that's been going on for several years, a huge black market from what I understand on milk powder, that people go to jail if they're found with milk powder in their luggage. And so, I mean, this is not just anecdotal stuff. Yeah. It's a onesie-twosie. I think you're starting to see a shift that is a consumption shift due to a lack of trust in the domestically produced products for food. So a food safety issue is certainly an issue that has to be taken seriously by somebody like us in the United States.
I suppose that you wouldn't have to have that larger percentage of the 300 million people in the middle class there, 1.3 billion total, but 300 million or 350 or 400 million in the middle class, if only had a third of them or 20% of them that didn't trust what they were looking at that came from China, that could make a huge impact on a marketplace.
Especially when they are preparing later this year to open their financial sector up, and they're also preparing to decrease the need for savings. I was reading an article last night that many Chinese have to save about 80% of the value of their real estate, and they don't have the loan structure that we have. The Chinese government has not developed that yet, and so the reason they're sitting on such huge savings is because they have to, because they simply don't have the financial instruments in many cases that's going to change here by the time we get to September, October, from what most of the academics and most of the really high-level economists over in China are talking about right now, that the government is on a path to changing that structure of their financial reforms so that they don't have to save as much and they can indeed increase their domestic consumption. So you're right, and then you add on top of that this huge pile of savings, and that becomes quite an issue to us.
Hey, thanks much.
Thank you, Todd.
Mike Zuzulow with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Now here's Dave Dickey with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the Farm Service Agency has extended the deadline for acreage reporting of spring planted crops from July 15th to August the 2nd. The crop insurance reporting deadline remains July 15th. Acreage reports are used to determine eligibility for programs such as the Direct and Counter-Cyclical Program, the Average Crop Revenue Election Program, the Conservation Reserve Program, and the Non-Insured Crop Disaster Assistance Program. Reaction from farm groups following yesterday's passage of a stripped-down farm-only farm bill was a mix of praise, disappointment, and disbelief. House Republican leaders scored a victory as the bill passed the House on a 216-208 party line vote. While the bill keeps much of the same language that was already in the House Agriculture Committee version, it does make one significant change. The House bill would eliminate the 1938 and 1949 permanent farm laws. Approval of the scaled-back farm bill is setting up what could be an even bigger fight over food stamps and the role of domestic food aid in the U.S. SNAP was not in the farm bill that was voted on yesterday. House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, a Republican of Virginia, said Republicans would act with dispatch to get a food stamp bill to the floor. But it remains unclear what a food stamp bill would look like, how it would move through the House, or how quickly lawmakers could craft a bill. In April, more than 47 million people were using the program, including those in 23 million households. Proposals to reduce the program have ranged from what was in the original farm bill, a 3% cut and changes in eligibility, to an overhaul of the program that would take a fraction of the federal money now spent and give it to the states to administer. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is predicting a record large dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico this summer, stretching all the way from South Texas to Alabama and perhaps encompassing an area as large as 8,561 square miles. Scientists conclude that the dead zone is caused when nitrogen-based fertilizer washes off farm fields in the Midwest Corn Belt and ends up in the Mississippi River, which flows into the Gulf. The Labor Department today says that U.S. wholesale prices rose by the most in 9 months in June, the Producer Price Index, reflecting what companies pay for everything from chickens to cars, rose a seasonally adjusted 0.8% from May. Food prices rose 0.2%, driven by a 4.2% increase in meat prices, the biggest in the category since May of 2010. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That second program we'll post to the website by about 6 o'clock p.m. Central Time, USA Tonight. Our guest will include this week Jim Bauer of Bauer Trading, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, Dan Zwicker from CGB Enterprises, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities. Now up next, Western Corn Rootworm adults are beginning to be seen in central Illinois. It's been a decade since farmers in the state of Illinois have had to worry much about the western corn rootworm. The little beetle, a worm-looking thing as a larvae, has largely been controlled by BT corn. The first of those BT genetic modifications has begun to fail in some places. YieldGuard, or the Cry3BB1 protein. Actually, the modification was purpose-built not to kill all western corn rootworm larvae feeding on the roots of corn. So over the last decade, those that survived have bred, and now, mostly in eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois, there are some yield-guard-resistant western corn rootworms. It means corn farmers must be more watchful because those populations might spread or develop in new areas, says University of Illinois Extension entomologist Mike Gray.
So we've encouraged producers to keep an eye on western adults this year. Also to certainly keep an eye out for lodged cornfields where they have planted BT hybrids and should expect good root protection. But we've had some heavy rains across much of the state this year. That tends to soften the soils. And if you have some storms accompanied by high winds, we could see some lodging in some of those areas. So again, if you've planted a BT hybrid and you see lodging in your field, certainly want to determine why that root protection may not be there, and you know, begin to notify if you see severe root injury. Begin to notify the seed industry representative and make sure that they're aware that root protection was not up to speed in that given field.
So the thing to do this season is to walk the fields looking for western corn rootworm adults, the beetles, and spot checking the root for damage. If the larvae is feeding on it, it will be pretty obvious. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this 12th day of July 2013. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's take a look at the cash grain market. The folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County are on the phone line with us. I think Greg Johnson should be there. Hi, Greg. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Todd. I'm doing well.
Well, busy day or not busy day today?
Not busy as far as farmer marketing is concerned. Wheat harvest is starting to pick up, so that kept us busy today.
Yeah, so how much? How far do you draw a wheat into the area? Because there aren't a lot of wheat fields in East Central Illinois, but there are a few, and a few not too far from the elevator there, too.
That's true. I think we draw a little bit from just across the Indiana state line, and then depending on, there's some mills down south, so we don't draw too far from the south, but basically east and north.
Good crop, good straw?
It was good before the rain we had earlier this week, and now I'm feeling the test weight and quality may be a little bit lighter than what we'd like to see.
How fast does it go bad?
Well, it seems heavy rains like that. It seems like that one rain when the wheat's ready, and then you get a heavy rain. All it takes is one rain.
I was in the basement of Mumford Hall for that one. I didn't even know it happened. I don't have windows down there. I talked to my wife, and I said, "Really, it just looks like it poured, and it must have really been a downwash." All right. Tell me about basis for corn, please.
Well, we are steady. I mean, it's still extremely, extremely strong. Farmers are still not selling a lot of old crop or new crop corn or beans this week. Old crop beans because they're probably not out there, and old crop corn because we just haven't reached their price levels yet, or it may be a point where they're just waiting for pollination, and once they feel a little bit more comfortable about their new crop prospects, then maybe they'll let loose that old crop corn.
Better give me your price levels in that case.
All right. We've got old crop corn at $6.80, new crop corn at $4.96. Old beans are $15.64, new beans are $12.40, and the wheat is $6.66.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon.
It's National Pecan Pie Day. Tradition holds that the French invented pecan pie soon after settling in New Orleans, after native North Americans introduced them to the nut. The first recipe for pecan pie may have been published in an 1891 issue of the Ladies' Home Journal in the column Mrs. Roar's Answers to Questions. On this day in agricultural history in 1859, William Goodale patented the paper bag manufacturing machine. Whether he was the actual inventor of the device is unknown. Two others, Margaret Knight and Francis Wolfe, could also lay claim to the invention. The paper bag was the primary way to take home groceries until the 1970s, when supermarkets switched to the much cheaper plastic bags. In 1873, it rained frogs in Kansas City. Scientific American concluded the frog downpour must have been caused by a tornado or other land-based storm. In 1861, or perhaps 1864, George Washington Carver was born. A U.S. botanist, educator, agricultural chemist, and inventor, he developed hundreds of uses for peanuts, soybeans, and sweet potatoes. He established the George Washington Carver Research Foundation for Agricultural Research. In 1884, George Eastman was born, an American inventor and industrialist. He pioneered development of rolled film and the Kodak camera, which helped promote large-scale amateur photography. And in 1920, the Panama Canal was formally dedicated. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Well, let's check now here on the closing market report, the weather forecast. Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Jim.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's a beautiful day. Can we expect more like it in the near future?
Yes, it actually is very nice out, and we can expect this to continue at least for a while. We've got tomorrow is going to be sunny with a high of 83, and on Sunday, a high of 86, and Monday, 87, and Tuesday, 88. So you kind of see this bit of a trend there of warming up as the week progresses there. But right now, it's actually not bad out. It's about 80 degrees out at Willard Airport, and a 58-degree dew point and a nice little breeze going there. But we're going to see that increase in temperatures and humidity as we move through into next week. But it will be definitely sunny. Really no chance of significant rain in the next several days. That's not in the cards at this point. So be a long, sunny, dry period, which is good news for corn and soybeans.
I really like the cool nights as of recent. How about in the future?
That's right. Yes, and the same story at night. It's gonna, tonight's gonna be very nice, low of 59, and then each day from there on, it's gonna get just a little bit warmer. Saturday night, low 65, and then by Sunday night, 69, and 72 by Monday night. So early morning temperatures are gonna start creeping up as that humidity level starts to creep up as well.
Have you been watching the grown regions across the Midwest and seen anything of interest?
Yeah, if you look at the kind of the Midwest in general, it's been fairly wet over the last 30 days, basically from Minnesota and Wisconsin and down to Illinois and across to Indiana and eastward. The dry spots are still out in the west, Missouri and much of Iowa, and then Kansas, Nebraska, and parts of the Dakotas have been on the dry side. So there's kind of a nice split there between those two regions there, the haves and have-nots as far as the rainfall in the last 30 days.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us.
You're welcome.
Hey, that's Jim Angel. He's at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute. Joins us here on the closing market report for this Friday afternoon. A couple of notes. Dave and I will both be out of the office next week, so if you're used to hearing us, I actually will be here, but on Memorex or tape, digitally if you prefer. And we'll put the programs together for the closing market report, and the folks in the news staff will be filling in for Dave in the morning, so all of our programming will be there, and we'll post it all up on the website as well. So nothing should change in that form, and the analysts are going to take their task on all by themselves next week. We left some holes in the programs. We'll see how that goes. I think it should be great, and you'll be able to hear them, just the regular analysts, during the closing market report each and every day. I'm traveling with the National Soybean Research Lab next week to the nation of Haiti, and we'll be looking at some of the world initiative on soy in human health functions there, food and nutrition, and actually poultry production as well. I hope to have some reports to you maybe up on our website at willag.org. I'll try to drop my Twitter account into that website and update it as the week goes along. And, of course, the following week will all be about the trip to Haiti. You have a great week, and I'll talk to you again live in a couple of weeks. That wraps up this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Don't forget about Commodity Week. It'll be posted by about 6 o'clock this evening. Jim Bauer will be our guest.